Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Vazquez. We thank you for downloading or picking up a CD copy of this audio broadcast. Here, Father Vazquez provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy. It is the means for providing people an intelligent and practical answer to life's difficulties. Based on the solid principles of love, faith and hope is expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchised members of the church community, and of course, the neophytes, those who are discovering truths in ancient Orthodoxy. These broadcasts are available every week, free of charge, either as a podcast at epostle.net, Apple iTunes Store, and now on Blueberry. Our commitment at epostle.net is to provide a medium for apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Hey, this is Father Vazquez, priest of the Armenian Church, welcoming you and welcoming you back to The Next Step, a podcast about life and love, about spirituality. What's about taking the next step in your path, in your quest for spirituality? A lot of good stuff happening over here. Going forward, we look backwards and we find from the beginning of time there are some basic truths that we all adhere to, some truths that are polished up today in a new form. We call that Orthodoxy. We invite you to kick back right now and join us as we take the next step. This is part of the expanding vision of the In His Shoes mission. And as the lady said, it's being brought to you by thepostle.net. Let's take the next step. I almost forgot that we were going to take the next step. I know. Well, my head might be in a cloud. You know, we just got down from the mountaintop. We were up at the mountaintop. Of course, this is our annual event. It is the Martin Luther King Jr. Now, let me say it again. The Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. annual retreat that is hosted by In His Shoes. This year was a gathering of sorts and put together by a very famous producer of this podcast, Susie. And Susie did such a wonderful job. Thank you, Susie. That was really, really nice. Appreciated it. We went on a hike, and following the hike, we had a chance to sit down and spend some time with, well, the words of Dr. King. Specifically in a speech that he had given called The American Dream. No. Now, this isn't the I Have a Dream speech. It's a prelude. It's a preface to that in many senses. Although he gave it afterwards, interestingly enough. But it's right about the same time in the early 60s, 63, 64. And talks about the American Dream. So I want to share with you some of the things that happened up there and some of the things that we contemplated. And actually bring it down to a talk about happiness. Got an article today, a friend of mine sent over from the European continent. It says, religion adds value to the happiness hypothesis. Do you believe it? Okay, come on. Those of you who are religious, do you believe you're happier than others who are not religious? Those of you who are finding religion now, I assume that if you've lost religion, you're not listening to this show right now. But if you're finding a religion, you're finding something good about it. I mean, do you feel like life is improving? Do you think that there's a smile on your face when there wasn't one before? What is happiness? It's an interesting question, isn't it? I mean, is that something that concerns you? I mean, specifically, we were looking at it through the American dream. You know, we've been told that here in America, you've been told that you have a right to pursue happiness. That's built right into the Declaration of Independence. It's built into the Constitution of the United States. An interesting concept. And how does religion play into that? Does religion play? Should it play? And what if you don't have religion? Can you smile without religion? Interesting question. We're going to be looking at all of that like we do every week. You know, we have a lot of fun going back and forth. This is, I want to tell you, first of all, going back and forth, I really appreciate all of the email that I get. I appreciate your kind prayers, your kind words. And please know that in return, every request that you make of me, you ask for prayers, please know, be assured of this, okay? Every prayer that you request, I take up to the holy altar during the Divine Liturgy, and on Sunday mornings, we celebrate the Divine Liturgy here in Glendale, and your request, your prayers are being offered in this Divine Liturgy that we celebrate every single week. And I know so many of you have shared some of the ups and downs in your lives with me. I appreciate all of that, and please know that you're in my prayers. I especially appreciate the happy ups. You know, there's a lot of ups that happen in life. We're just not tuned into those, are we? So we got to hear more ups. Unfortunately, the news is built around negativity, isn't it? Like you hear about the one accident that takes place in the evening commute. You don't hear about the million people who make it home safely. I mean, that's not news, is it? But of course, that's happy news for the million families that are waiting for those people. Of course, that's very, very happy news. They got home safely, sound. That should be news. That's exciting. That's happy news. But you hear about the one tragedy, the one accident that happens, and because that is somehow considered news. It's interesting how all of this pans out. As we're talking about happiness, it's interesting what are the outside influences that affect our happiness. So, getting back to my prayer requests, I appreciate all of the prayer requests you make, and I appreciate all of the happy news you share with me, too, in your lives, because your happiness, of course, becomes my happiness. That's part of what we call the church community. And we are basically a virtual church. We are looking after each other. I'm feeling more and more of this, especially these past few weeks. We've been studying the book of Acts at our Questions in Faith series. And each week, as we look more and more at the early apostolic church, in other words, the church that was being run by the apostles of Jesus Christ, we're finding more and more, and this is, it's actually been an eye-opener for me, too. I haven't read the book of Acts in seminary days, so it's been a kind of a nice one for me, too. The more and more you read it, the more you realize that it was basically a church with a social mission. It was reaching out to people who couldn't tend for themselves, who couldn't care for themselves. And your pain was my pain. My pain was your pain. And they understood that concept. They understood that idea, no man is an island unto himself. And it's been all coming together, of course, at our Martin Luther King gathering. We discussed this, too, because King, of course, one of his favorites is talking about that interconnectivity of people. So I want to share some ideas about that as well in the next few minutes as we're talking about taking the next step in our spiritual quest. Let's see, along with that, last Sunday we had a benefit for our Team Inner Shoes. Yes, let's hear it for Team Inner Shoes. And it was a place called Shanto's Bakery. Now, I've got to tell you, it's my first time that I went up there, but I'm going to give them a plug. If you happen to be in the Glendale area, you know what your first job has to be, is come down and see us at the Youth Ministry Center. Then I would say the next thing you need to do is get up there to Shanto's Bakery. What a nice little place. It's like kind of hidden. It's technically Glendale. I think it has a Glendale zip code, but they call it La Crescenta. It's the Crescent. Yeah, it's way up there. Not too far away from the Youth Ministry Center. Anyway, we went up there, and they gave 20% of their sales that day to our Team in Her Shoes. We really appreciated all that they did. But what great food! We had some great, great Armenian food, and it was just a wonderful afternoon to spend together. And it gives me another opportunity to share with you that next September we're going to be walking in her shoes. It's Team in Her Shoes. Yes, a takeoff on In His Shoes for breast cancer. And this is an Avon walk that has been going on for several years and collecting money for research means to combat this dreaded disease. Not only breast cancer, because no man is an island, right? One cancer, one discovery leads to the other. So you help out with breast cancer, be assured that you're helping out with all kinds of cancers. So we're going to be collecting money and walking a Team In Her Shoes. We have about 20 people that are going to be walking on behalf of Team In Her Shoes. And hopefully, God willing, I'm looking forward to doing the walk as well. And each person is committing, collecting $1,800 a person. So that comes out to about $36,000 that we're going to be collecting by September and turning that over to breast cancer research. So it's an awesome responsibility, an awesome project, and I want to just give you a heads up right now. You're going to be hearing about it more and more in the months to come. But we had a great kickoff fundraiser, and another shout out to Shanto's Bakery. Where are those kids that we keep in the closet? Yeah, bring them out. Yeah, that's the spirit. Somebody who helps us out, of course. They get the kids. Now get the kids back into the closet. No, we don't do things like that. Okay, before you start complaining, no. We may do it to Ken. We may throw him in the closet, but no, we don't do things like that to kids. Listen, after we went to Shanto's, I had a fantastic, fantastic evening, Sunday evening. We went out and we saw the Sayat Nova dance group. Now, I got to tell you something, okay? If they are playing close to you, if you have a chance to see them, you have to make this effort to be there and watch this. The Sayat Nova Dance Company of Boston celebrated its 25th anniversary with a performance here in Glendale. Oh, this was something. It was breathtaking. It was moving. It was emotional. It was exciting. I mean, I can't think of how many different ways that I could share this with you. But I'm going to try, okay? I'm going to try with a few words over here because it is a visual experience. It is an audible experience. There's so much to it, and it really is something that you need to experience for yourself. The Sayat Nova Dance Group, as I said, they celebrated their 25th anniversary, and it was about 25 years ago that a good friend of ours joined that group at that time. Her name is Seta. And she would tell us about it. She was with the group for about 12 years. We always heard about this fantastic group out there. And this time we got a chance to see it. Oh, it was something else. The entire performance was called A Journey Through Time. And what they did is they actually presented the Armenian story, that journey through time, through dance and through music, through songs. They began with the pre-Christian era, with the hedonistic, and it just fascinating the way they put this to dance. They brought it to Khorvirab, where St. Gregory the Illuminator receives the light of Christ. They took it one step further to the Battle of Vartanants, and through dance you'd see that battle. Then, of course, my personal favorite, those of you who listen know, Sayat Nova was featured. Of course, the name of the group, but Sayat Nova was featured as a point in time, too, as the journey through time. And then this was probably the hardest part to watch in the whole thing. It's called The Dance of the 20 Brides, and it's based on a poem that was written by Siamanto. He was a great Armenian poet at the turn of the last century during the Armenian genocide, The 20 Brides. And let me read right from the program. It says, it depicts the era of the Armenian genocide by the Turks and the events that took place in the city of Adana in 1909. The presentation is based on the poem The Dance, written by famed writer Siamanto. It depicts the story of 20 young brides that are brought to a courtyard to be tortured and charred to death. Observing this scene of torture and massacres, beloved Armenian composer Gomidas Vartabed, who, unable to comprehend man's inhumanity against man, loses his mind and goes insane. I gotta tell you, this one dance, it was very, very difficult to watch because, first of all, it was extremely creative because something as difficult as genocide to be portrayed through music and dance, that was a feat in itself. And so the choreography, the entire production was exceptional. It was just exceptional that they were able to put this together. But at the end of it, now what do you do? Do you clap for something like this? Of course, you clap for the performance, but you're just left in awe. You're left crying. You're left emotional. And it was a very, very difficult piece. And they did it splendidly. They put it together. It was basically something that you could point to and say, this is what you need to see. You want to know about what happened during the Armenian Genocide? Here, take a look. This is done so beautifully, so professionally. It is in dance with songs, and they told the story. They told the story of the 20 girls as they were being marched out. And this is a true story, you know. They were being marched. They were raped, brutally killed. And Gomidas Vartabed, of course, the famed Armenian churchman of the time, he actually loses his mind. He eventually died in 1935 because, you know, he couldn't cope after the genocide. He couldn't cope with the reality of man's inhumanity to man. How could men be so savage? How could they be so brutal as to do something like this to another human being, to another group of people? And this was just recorded so beautifully in this production. I hope that there'll be an opportunity to see it, and I will follow through. If I do hear about this being on DVD available, I would highly suggest that people get this and watch this program. So the rest of the entire concert was just splendid. A lot of dancing, a lot of great music. And again, this is the Sayat Nova Dance Group of Boston. This was their 25th anniversary performance. So you see, I had like a wild weekend. I mean, between the Walk for Breast Cancer, the Martin Luther King gathering, the walk up there, the hike up there, the Sayat Nova Dance of Boston. You could say all kinds of emotions went through me. And so I'm happy to share those with you today as a prelude to the rest of today's next step. See, it's all about taking the next step. Anyway, we start off every podcast with a song of the day. And I keep saying we started off. We're like way into the podcast, aren't we, by the time we listen to it. Anyway, this is a song. I'm going to pick on this CD that I played a cut from a few weeks ago. It is by Norah Kardashian. No relation to the Kardashians that you all know. Maybe there is, but anyway, definitely not on the album. There's no liner notes that would suggest that there was a relationship. Anyway, it is off of a CD called Zarastan. And the song that I'm going to pick out is called Haydik, My Father. And I want to dedicate this to a churchman we lost just a couple days ago, the Reverend Father Artun Sampadian. And he was a priest here in this diocese, in the Western Diocese, for several years. He served in different communities from San Francisco to the Central Valley to the Fresno area. He was called to retirement several years ago. Had a difficult life, and he will be laid to rest probably right about the time that you are starting to listen to this podcast up in San Francisco at the St. John Armenian Church up there. We'll put a link on our show notes for sure so you can check him out and check out all the wonderful things that he did through his illustrious ministry as a servant of God. Here is a song by Norah Kardashian called Haydi. called Heidik by Norair Kardashian off of the Zarastan album. We will put a link on our show notes today so you can check out that album and all the good music that comes from this artist. Interesting song, huh? And just a nice steady beat. And at the very end, you hear the Heidik John. It means my beloved father. And of course, we remember a father to many, many people. The Reverend Father Artun Sampadian, who passed away just a couple days ago, and will be laid to rest probably right about now as you're listening to this, by the time this gets out. He will be laid to rest in San Francisco at the St. John Armenian Church.
Spin me back down the years and the days of my youth. Draw the lace and black curtains and shut out the whole truth. Spin me down the long ages, let them sing the song.
I promised you we'd be talking a little bit about happiness, so I got to get a little bit upbeat, as I was just told through the headphones that I got to cheer up a little bit. Okay, I'm sorry. I did go down a little bit, didn't I? Anyway, I am cheered up right now, and I want to share with you some ideas about happiness. And the reason why is because, of course, we have a document here in the United States called the Declaration of Independence. And as the founding fathers of this country were declaring their independence, they came up with this beautiful statement. It says, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." And so much do I love this that if you walk into my office, let me just describe. I've got an office that's in the middle of Glendale. I've got all kinds of icons and, paraphernalia that point to Armenian church. And then in the midst of that, I do have on one corner of my wall Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech, and on the other one, the unanimous Declaration of Independence for the United States. And these words look at me every morning when I walk into that office because I think that they are sacred. And I want to share with you something that we read at the Martin Luther King gathering this last Monday. It is a piece called The American Dream, and it was a speech by the Reverend King in 1964. Now you got to remember, this is not the I Have a Dream speech. It's The American Dream. And the reason why I selected this particular speech is because a few years ago something happened that really it affected me quite heavily. When Barack Obama, our current president, received the Nobel Peace Prize, in his acceptance speech, he made a case for war. He made a case for war. He talked about just war, and he made a case that, you know, there are certain times where it is inevitable that you have to fight. Just a couple of pieces. He said, "We are still at war, and I'm responsible for the deployment of thousands of young Americans to battle in distant land." Now, this is the leader of the free world. This is the recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. And he says, "Some will kill and some will be killed. And so I come here with an acute sense of the cost of armed conflict, filled with difficult questions about the relationship between war and peace and our effort to replace one with the other." Now, these questions are not new. War, in one form or another, appeared with the first man. And he goes on and he talks about just war. And he says, basically, that there are times where you have to appeal for war. And arguably, anybody can make this argument. You can make the argument. But what happens to the dream? Like, aren't we supposed to have some dreams that are basically, well, like most dreams, unrealistic, but still attainable? Like, when do we give up on those dreams? And I felt like in his words, he had given up on a dream that, well, Martin Luther King said so eloquently. I mean, this is the dream. that you need to have. You need to dream of this world where people are judged by the content of their character and not by the color of their skin. You have that dream. It definitely wasn't the case in the 1950s in America. 1960s, it wasn't the case. But you work towards that. And so you have a Barack Obama who is judged not by the color of his skin, but he is judged by the content of his character, and for the first time, a man with African heritage, an African American, is now elected the president of the United States. That dream comes true, right? By pursuing it, by following it. And same thing, God has given us this imagination, and he's asking us to imagine a world where there can be peace. And you need to strive for that, albeit even if it's a dream, you need to at least state that dream. Now, in this particular writing, the late Dr. King, The American Dream, I want to share with you a couple pieces that he says, a couple paragraphs that he talks about. He says, I would like to use as the subject matter of The American Dream this statement from the Declaration of Independence, which I read a minute ago. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. This is a dream, he says. This is a dream. It's okay to dream. Now, one of the first things we notice about this dream, he continues, is an amazing universalism. It does not say some men, it says all men. It does not say some, say all white men, but it says all men, which includes black men. It doesn't say all Protestants, but it says all men, which includes Catholics. It doesn't say all Gentiles, it says all men, which includes Jews. And that is something else at the center of the American dream, which is one of the distinguishing points, one of the things that distinguishes it from other forms of government, particularly totalitarian system. It says that each individual has certain basic rights that are neither derived from nor confirmed by the state. Interesting, right? Certain rights. We have certain rights, basic rights, that are neither derived nor confirmed by the state. They are gifts from the hands of Almighty God. It says it right in the Declaration of Independence. They are endowed by their Creator. And Dr. King says, these are gifts from the hand of Almighty God. Very seldom, if ever, in the history of the world has a socio-political document expressed in such profound, eloquent, and unequivocal language the dignity and the worth of human personality. You see, that's the dream. You see, that's the dream. And so you work towards that dream. You try to actualize that dream. You try to make that dream a reality. How do you do it? Well, you are part of the dream maker. This is why I said earlier, as we're studying the book of Acts, it's just beautiful for me to see that the early Christian church, the apostolic church, in other words, the church that the first apostles got together and formed, had a structure. It had a structure where there was meetings, where there were people that were talking and discussing. Should we help them? Is the church this or that? What is the nature of the church? And in that discussion process, it became evident that the church was responsible for others. In other words, if you are one body in Christ and part of that body is hurting, you need to get out there and help the other part of that body. Otherwise, you're in danger of hurting yourself, right? I mean, think about how simple that is. What good is it if you're a hand, right, and your heart is suffering? The first thing you should do as a hand is go and pump your heart so that it's beating properly so it could get the blood over to your hand. Or if you're a heart, what good are you if you don't provide the blood to the rest of the body? If your toes aren't getting the blood, hey, you're going to stop. You're going to die. So you are all interconnected. And of course, Dr. King uses that expression that he, in so many of his speeches, he talks about the interconnectivity of people. He cites John Donne. I mean, here, let me read again from The American Dream. He says, "All I'm saying is simply this, that all life is interrelated, and we are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. For some strange reason, I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be, and you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. This is the interrelated structure of reality," says Dr. King. John Donne caught it years ago and placed it in a graphic terms: "No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main." And he goes on toward the end to say, "Any man's death diminishes me because I am involved in mankind. Therefore, never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee." Dr. King brought this together and he says, "I think this is the first challenge and it is necessary to meet it in order to move on toward the realization of the American dream, the dream of men of all races, creeds, national backgrounds, living together as brothers. This is the dream, of course, of peace. This is a dream that, if you look at it, Jesus Christ came and began." And Dr. King was very much influenced. In fact, he was a minister of the gospel. Was influenced by the works, by the ministry of Jesus Christ. In fact, Jesus Christ came to save the soul. He came and he said, "It doesn't matter who you are." St. Paul, the apostle, says it so beautifully. "There is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus." I mean, think about this. I mean, this is the beauty of it. You know, if Jesus Christ, and I've shared this with you in the past, I've said how many times people will associate Jesus as being a Jew. Sure, because Judaism is passed on through the mother. But that was only 2,000 years ago that they changed the rule. Who is Jesus? Jesus is the Son of God. If Jesus you consider as the Son of Mary, yeah, then he's a Jew. You consider him as the Son of God, then he belongs to all of us. Then he is neither Jew nor Greek. He is neither slave nor free. He is neither male nor female. We are all one because he is one. And so we are each other's brothers. We are each other's sisters. And you cannot kill your brother. You cannot hate your brother. You've got to live in harmony. You've got to be able to balance the life out. And so the American dream in many ways is a challenge for us. And this is why I said earlier, I mean, it hurts me when people are not willing to dream, are willing to just forget about it and just concede to the way the life is, the way that the world gives us. That, hey, look around you and it's basically bad news and pick up the gun and this is how we'll bring about peace, by killing one another. We'll bring about peace by stockpiling weapons, by being stronger than everybody else. We'll bring about peace. Well, it may work, okay? It may have worked in the past, but that's not the dream, is it? That's not the dream, is it? Is that the best we can do? Or is there a possibility that we can dream, we can hope, we can work towards, we can become the body, the feet, the arms, the heart of this body that starts helping one another to work towards the dream? So that we have life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Is happiness a goal? Well, it has to be. It has to be. There's nothing wrong with it. You know, you start asking people, what do you pray for? What are the things that people pray for? They pray for happiness. I mean, I don't think anybody ever prays for bad things, do they? It's kind of funny, isn't it? Who would there sit there and say, I pray for a life that's tragic? No, you pray for the good things. Why? Because it gives you that sense of happiness. And so this article that we originally talked about, it says, religion adds value to the happiness hypothesis, shares in this too. And this is why I'm bringing it up in this show. Next step, Armodoxy. I mean, you're talking about the Armenian Orthodox faith coming to us from the beginning of time, coming to us from the beginning of all creation. It's about this quest for happiness, the equilibrium factor. And so this is one of our missions, is to look for that happiness. This article, dated July of 2011, it says, "We now know that rising levels of material wealth do not lead to similar increases in happiness and quality of life." So what does make people happier? Religion seems to. But how does this happen? A research network funded by the Religion and Society Program and led by Elaine Graham and John Atherton offers some answers. Far from making you happy above a certain income level, increased income is actually associated with greater social and individual stress. Oh, okay. I like that. Let me read it again. Next time you're complaining about where you are financially, hey, listen to this. Increased income is actually associated with greater social and individual stress. The observation has become known as the happiness hypothesis. Religious values and participation have, however, been found to be significant for enduring levels of happiness. The economist Richard Lanyard has identified 7 key indicators of well-being: secure family relationships, income, meaning and relationships in work, community and friendship networks, health, personal freedom, and personal values and philosophy of life. You can see how religion could positively affect well-being, providing networks, meaning, value, and a philosophy of life. Indeed, Lanyard says, people who believe in God are happier. Wow! Wild, huh? I will definitely put a link to this article on our show notes. And I'm going to pass it along to Linda. You catch Linda's show, Compass, with Linda Zadoyan. Takes place every Tuesday on the Apostles Net. And I'm sure she's going to run with this, because I think that the 7 points that come out over here are worth... Well, you know, it's in the beginning of her show. It's all these points that really give us meaning and purpose. And I'm going to ask you to really read this, look it over, and come back to me. Give me a direction on where you want to take this, because I think it's fascinating. I think if you can get to these Lanyard's 7 points and you really identify it, you start understanding that religion is so essential to the entire idea of life, that what many biologists several years ago found, that we are basically hardwired for religion, that it is basically something that a person, an individual, a human being strives for, bringing purpose and meaning and tuning in to a higher power. It's what we talk about here on Armadoxy. I mean, think about it for a moment. I mean, here's the Armenian people, and yet they have survived despite all of the difficulties that they've endured, including persecution, including war, including genocide. And yet the Armenian religion has been at the forefront, has been one that has taught them the values of perseverance, of discipline, of happiness. That's a hard one. You don't think about happiness in those terms, of course, because we think of happiness as, ha-ha, get me another iPad and I'll be okay and I'll be very happy. No, the real happiness is deep down. It's something that you can't buy at Costco. It's something that you can't pick up at Best Buy. It's something that Amazon.com doesn't supply. It is the happiness. And yet, Richard Lanyard in this place does say income. Income. It's one of the 7 points. So let's kick that around. Kick that around in your head. What are the things that make you happy? How important is that happiness? And as far as Dr. King goes, he challenges us to look at it as a dream. To look at it as a dream that maybe right now we're not there, but definitely those are all the dreams. We're never there. But the first step in making a dream a reality, you have to wake up, right? They're just dreams until you open your eyes. And then you say, oh, that was beautiful. I want to make that work. I want to do something to make that dream into a reality. That's what it's all about. We'll be back in a couple minutes, and we're going to be sharing with you a very important project that's going to be taking place in the next few weeks. It's going to be a walk for family values that's going to be taking place on the Feast of Diarun Tarach. I want to share that with you in a few minutes. Here's Susie to make an announcement about how you can get involved in all the good things that are happening right now.
Before getting back to the next step with Father Vazgen, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this ministry is supported through the heartfelt donations of listeners like you. Thanks for keeping us in your prayers and partnering with this expanding and dynamic outreach. We are now in the fourth year of broadcasting and pleased that this voice of Armodoxy is being heard by a worldwide audience. The next step is entering homes and communities with a solid message proclaiming God's message of love, forgiveness, and compassion. We look forward to your comments and words of encouragement. Address your comments 24/7 to our email address, feedback@epostle.net, or via our website at epostle.net. During these past 4 years, we have consistently produced The Next Step as a gift to our listeners. Please consider partnering in this dynamic ministry by making a contribution. By pressing on the donate button on our website, you can set up automatic donations, either weekly, monthly, or annually. Your donation goes a long way in furthering this ministry. Even more, tell your friends and family by sharing the Next Step link or website with them. We're on iTunes and Blueberry, as well as Facebook and Twitter. We are excited about this ministry and invite you to share in our enthusiasm. This is Susie wishing you all of God's blessings in your life. We now return to the Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Susie gets all the cool music over here. Oh, isn't that something? Doesn't she get all the cool music? Yeah, I know. Maybe, well, cool person, right? Anyway, she puts together a great program and she does so much work over here. Okay, Susie, you deserve it. And I want to just thank you all for joining us, and I want to tell you how important your participation in this ministry is. Well, obviously, if you weren't out there, we wouldn't be here. But this is what's important about it, that we're sharing in a ministry that has been given to us. And I know so many of you who write to us, you feel that calling. It's a calling that God is speaking to you. You know, you can do so many different things, but there is an opportunity to really inspire and get out and touch other people, touch lives. You know, I get email from the weirdest places. I'm sorry, I shouldn't say the weirdest places. Okay, now I'm not even going to mention where the places are. Just let's say places that you wouldn't expect, okay? On different continents. We get from Australia, from South America, from Asia. Okay, now I can understand Europe. I could understand even Africa. Okay, let me say, let me qualify Africa by saying we get it from Egypt. Some listeners in Egypt, okay? Well, that is Africa, you know? And, like, it is just so beautiful that we're able to touch so many people, and it's because of your prayers. It's because you are passing along the links, and you're telling people that you're finding value in this. We get people from Armenia. That is really something that touches me because, you know, we have done it intentionally. This Next Step is done as an English language broadcast for the Armenian Church, just to show that, you know, the Armenian Orthodox faith has so much to offer the waiting world, especially by way of peace, by way of love, by way of understanding one another. And then when we hear from our listeners in Armenia, that is especially touching to me because, well, there's an extra step involved, right? It's not the native language, but understanding that Armenian has something, the Armenian Orthodox faith has something to offer the rest of the world, and to say that, yes, okay, it doesn't matter what language it's in, we're there. We're going to take the extra step, and we're going to be listening. So big shout out to everybody in Armenia, everyone all around the world who are listening, who are encouraging, and most importantly, who are praying. You know, it's a very simple thing. Include Epostle in your prayers. And it's so easy to remember. It's apostolic evangelism for an electronic and expanding universe. And this came about, you know, a few years ago when we realized that there was so much that was going on around us. And sure, we're in the center of it. We're right here in Glendale, and there's such an incredibly large Armenian community that really it's sometimes mind-boggling, because especially if you've lived in Armenian communities all your life, you know that basically you start knowing and getting to know everybody in that community. But imagine an Armenian community so big that there are people every single day that are just brand new people. This is at least new to me, because growing up here in America, I kind of knew the people in the community. Growing up in San Jose, as the early part of my ministry, the first 15 years of my priesthood was spent in San Jose. We were about 600, and then we eventually got out to about 800 families. And we, you know, it's not like you know everybody, but you get to know. There's a familiarity that's in the community. But now you come out to someplace like this, which is very much like Armenia. You know, it's like there's different corners of it, and there's different segments of the community, different portions of it. And it is huge. And so when we realize that, you know, there are boundaries that are created because of the walls that go around us, why not tear down those boundaries and make this accessible throughout the world? Make this ministry something that can be accessed wherever people are. And the internet gave us that opportunity. The internet was a blessing from God, just as every other technology, just as every other means has been used by the church. I mean, what about art, right? What about stained glass windows? Have you ever thought about that? The church used that technology to get the message out. They used the printing press to get the message out. And they used radio, they used television, and now technology has given us an opportunity to use these computers. So we've got podcasts, we're on Twitter, we're on Facebook. They are only opportunities. It's not like it's something miraculous. It's just the miraculous part that God loves us so much that he gives us this opportunity to be creative, to really push our limits. And I think in many ways we are doing that. We are pushing our limits with Apostle. We need your prayers to do that. So please keep us in your prayers. Well, as we end today's show, I want to share with you the latest project that we have and get you involved in it, because it is an exciting one. More than anything else, it is an important one. And this got started off as a diocesan task force to look at and to study and, well, to relieve tensions among families and domestic violence. Yes, it's something that I have spoken to you about in the past, and domestic violence seems to hit everyone, without regard of ethnic makeup. Maybe the Martin Luther King dream in reverse. So there is a negativity out there. This is one of those negative things, much like a cancer that doesn't look at who it's going to affect. It just hits. Same thing. Domestic violence is out there. But there is a difference. In that cancer, we still don't know how to resolve it. Domestic violence, we can resolve right now. We can take a step by making peace the option. And we're going to be doing that by focusing in on the family. In fact, it is very prevalent. I remember prevalent in the Armenian community, the issue of domestic violence. I remember last year sometime when I was told by a very high-ranking official in the Armenian government that it is not a priority. It happened to have taken place. He made that statement to me in October 2010, and it was the following day that Zarui Petrosyan, I remember her by name because it hit the internet, that here was a young woman who was killed by her husband and mother-in-law, who had beaten her in an act of domestic violence. And certainly as a priest working here in the Pasadena and Glendale area, where you have Armenian families, you have tempers, you have issues among those families, economic situations that are not always very pleasing, you have issues, you have domestic violence taking place. And so I was very fortunate enough a few months ago when our Archbishop said that he would support us if we came up with a task force that could look into it and come up with some solutions. And we are coming up with a solution, which is going to be a resource center here in the Los Angeles area, coming out of our diocesan headquarters. But along with that resource center, there's going to be an opportunity for a hotline and many, many different programs that are going to be educating the community. And I hope I don't have to tell you how important this is. You know how important it is. There are circles. There are children learn from their parents, and you know all the statistics. But the first step that we need to do is, first of all, acknowledge that the problem exists. Second of all, address the problem. And so we're going to be doing that. And it happens to take place on February 13th this year. Those of you who are Next Step listeners know that I get excited about all kinds of astrological anomalies. These are like things when things line up, when the stars and the, especially the equinox. Didn't we just celebrate the equinox? Well, there is something coming up in February, sometimes called Groundhog's Day. It is the midwinter, February 12th. That, of course, that midwinter feast is based on December 25th being your Christmas feast. You have Groundhog's Day. But, of course, if January 6th is your Christmas, then February 14th becomes your midwinter feast. And our Groundhog's Day for the Armenian Church, so to speak, is February 14th. It's called Yarantarach. It is called the Presentation of the Lord. And it focuses in on the story that is repeated to us by the evangelist Saint Luke. And I invite you to look at that story. It's in Luke chapter 2. It is the story of how Jesus is brought to the temple by Joseph and Mary and is being presented to the temple. And so on that same day, actually on the night before, we're going to be having a walk which begins in Glendale and culminates in Burbank at the Western Diocese headquarters at the St. Leon Church. It happens to be also St. Leon's Day that day, Reventians. I'll be talking about this next week. You don't have to take notes right now. Just remember, put it on your calendar, okay? I'll be talking about this and I'll be explaining everything. But what's important, what's really, really important about this is we're going to be focusing in on families. Because Joseph took Mary. Joseph realized his obligation and his responsibility as a human being, as a father. And he adopted the child, right? The child Jesus as his own. He brought up the child and he took that responsibility to love and care. And guess what? He was a man. Men do love. Men do care. Men have compassion. It's about time we start talking about it. Violence doesn't solve anything. And so we're going to be organizing under this slogan that says, "Violence hurts, but love conquers." This is going to be taking place February 13th. I want to invite you to get on our website, In His Shoes. We'll be writing about it in the next couple days. We'll be blogging about it here and there. Do need your prayers for this one, okay? This is a big one. I really, really am asking for your prayers. Let's make it a worldwide prayer day that day, that we look at one another and see the presence of God in our lives by the responsibility we take and care we take for one another. Well, we are at the end of today's show. I hope you have enjoyed today's show as much as we've enjoyed producing it. Want to invite you to get out to our website, inhisshoes.org. That's the mothership. And also, we are on Facebook and Twitter. Follow us on Twitter, In His Shoes. And of course, we are on epostle.net, where you could get all kinds of broadcasting from us. Do check out The Compass with Linda Zadoyan every Tuesday. And of course, the Next Step podcast every Thursday. For Susie, our producer, for Ken, our engineer, and Ani with her bubbles. This is Father Vasquez inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
We trust you've enjoyed this broadcast. This episode of The Next Step, as well as all previous episodes, are available for downloading at epostle.net or at Apple's iTunes Store. To write to us with comments or questions, please direct your message to feedback@epostle.net. Your kind prayers and donations ensure the continuity of these quality broadcasts. For the production crew and all the members of the In His Shoes Ministries, this is Susie, looking forward to taking the next step with you again next week. And now here's the fine print.
The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of vpostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.